people keep going, when are you going to do Blade Runner? My cousin texted me going, but when are you doing Planet of the Apes? And I'm like, I'm in the 30s. I'm not going to get to, like, there's a whole bunch of B movies in the 50s. And she got slightly annoyed at me. And I said, don't hate me. I do like it, but I can't just suddenly jump forward.
Welcome to List Envy, the podcaster that knows all the right and proper ways to consume pop culture. I am Keeper of the Lists, Mark Steadman, and every week I bring on a guest, and together we collaborate to build a top five list on a topic they choose. This week, my guest is Aisha Khan, the host of every single sci-fi film ever, an award-winning podcast very much after my own heart, as it's attempting to work its way chronologically through, as its name suggests, every single science fiction film ever. I guess as long as it is in some way viewable. And in honour of Aisha's area of study, today we are building our top five list of androids from sci-fi movies.
As a teenager, I didn't have cable or satellite or whatever it was. And my best friend, Carol, loved it a bit. She used to have it, and they used to have The Next Generation on every weekday. And she used to record it all. And then I used to watch five episodes on the weekend, one after the other. And so I think that's the grounding. Also, I've got two older brothers. They, you know, I grew up watching the original series as well. I've just always been fascinated by space and the idea of traveling through it, and probably not going to do that now. But I like, and then I also like these all kind of these themes, which I think started with the Star Trek, but the more kind of, what is society? What is humanity? What is, you know, the kind of slightly sociological, political and philosophical themes as well. But also the pachoom-pachoom spaceships, that's always.
Yeah, because we need spaceship go boom.
Yeah, so all of it really.
Here's a tricky question, I think, before we get into this, because, you know, if we are going to be talking about androids, we need to define or decide what is an android versus what is merely a robot. And I'm murky on this. Philosophically, I feel like I'm set, but I think my list might have some issues. But I'd love your thoughts.
I'm not sure. Because there's a thing where you can go, okay, if it's AI, it's an android. But that's kind of one side of it. And then the other thing is, well, I think we've... Do you generally think that if it is looks like or tries to look like a human, that's the android?
This was my thinking, is that it's got to be humanoid shape. But my first one is like, it's roughly like a child's humanoid shape, but other than that, no. I mean, it has things that look like eyes, but like, yeah, I don't know how far we adhere to that, you know?
I'm wondering if I know what yours is, but just because of your background. So I think we go along and then we can veto and we can go, red card, we're not having that. No.
All right.
Although I'm unlikely to do that. Team up.
Okay.
Yeah,
that sounds like Dale. I'm too conciliatory to be that combative. Okay, let's get started then. What is your, or who, I guess we'll stick with what, is your first, your number one pick for an android in a sci-fi film?
Okay, Terminator 2.
Lovely.
Now, I'm going with 2, because that was the film I saw when I was 13 in the cinema. I'd already seen Terminator, even though I probably shouldn't have, because I think the rating is not something a child should watch. And I mean the Arnold Schwarzenegger character. I saw T2 in the cinema and it had left a phenomenal impression on me. From the first bit, he goes into the bar, he asks for, what is it? I want your keys, your boots and your motorcycle.
Your clothes, your boots and your motorcycle.
Far better than I could do it. And then also, sorry, spoilers ahead, but when you've seen Terminator, you think he's the bad guy, and then you assume that the T-1000 is the good guy going out, you know, he's a policeman and he's going out to, you know, save this kid. And when it switches around, it was just a phenomenal film. And also, Sarah Connor, I saw that at 13. It really inspired me to start working out. Like, I was like, I'm going to be able to do push-ups and pull-ups, and I'm going to be ready for this apocalypse when it comes. It was a phenomenal film, and I was at just the right age. And so because of the impact the film had on me, I'm going to go with that as my number one.
Okay. So I have the Terminator film. So I mentioned this in my third pick, but I went in the other direction because I thought I always pick goodies. So we may come back to that. Oh yeah, lovely choice. I hadn't so. So had you seen T2 first?
No, I saw Terminator at my, I had family who lived in Wolverhampton, and I saw Terminator.
Shout out to the Midlands.
Yeah. I saw that at their house, and that was really cool because you could kind of tell that I wasn't really supposed to watch it, but when there's older kind of family around, you get away with stuff. And I loved that as well. So this kind of, you know, unrelenting machine. Yeah, absolutely love both of them. But T2 was just so much more impactful for me.
Yeah, I think I'd watched T2 before T1 quite a number of times before I'd seen the first one. And so I think, yeah, I missed that reveal. I think that's such an important thing of seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger and going, okay, here's the baddie again. And then suddenly the bait and switch. You know, I sort of, because I wasn't really aware much of anything of it. You know, I just remember watching the film for the first time. So yeah, I think that's a really good point about how that unexpected sort of twist happens. I think it's very good.
And it's also been a comfort movie for me for a while. I don't know why. And my daughter is now 14, so I watched it with her recently, but I really wanted her to experience the bait and switch. So I was trying to tell her the backstory of T1 because I was like, I don't think she's old enough to watch T1. I can't really remember. And so I was trying to go, this is the bad guy. And he's been chasing her in 1984 when the original came out. So I hope that she got it. But obviously the fear isn't there. And also she doesn't love sci-fi as much as I do.
No.
I don't know if it's a kind of I think it's partly rebellion. And every time she likes something that is sci-fi, I'm like, well, that's sci-fi. oh, you like reading Hunger Games, do you? Well, that's dystopia, that's sci-fi.
Okay, so before I get on to my first pick, I noted that all of the picks that I was making were male, and then I was like, yeah, if I were to put female androids into this, the only ones I can really seem to find are basically pleasure bots, and I'm not comfortable
with
that.
I've got three on my list of five, and maybe another potentially one or two.
Okay, good. Yes. Okay, so my number one then is Marvin.
Yes, I knew it.
Yes, of course you did.
Actually, I had it in my top
five.
Yes,
oh, wonderful.
But then I was like, no, he's obviously going to choose Marvin, so he's been moved down to number nine. But yeah.
So if we're going to go with a movie depiction, because that is the rules here, he is much more like a robot than he is anything else. He describes himself as a robot, but it's actually Jeffrey McGivern. That's not the actual, that's the radio play. He will always be my my Ford prefect, Jeffrey McGivern, describes Marvin as the paranoid android. I believe it's him who gives him that moniker. It's either him or Zaphod. Anyway, he calls him the paranoid android. So, you know, for that reason, I'm going to go with it. But he's got what they call genuine people personality, which is this ghastly prototype created by the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation. And he begins his life with us very concerned that he's bringing other people down. And then by the end of it, he's so grumpy and surly and arrogant and kind of just rude that it's quite the weird sort of character sort of arc. But he was voiced in the film by Alan Rickman. Absolutely perfect. And I really like the character design in the film. There's not huge masses of things that I love about the film. I like most of the people who were involved in it. I just something didn't quite fit. And I think they did, you know, they did their best. but I really like the character design for Marvin. He's giant head because he's got the brain the size of a planet, and this sort of little body, and it just, the head is so well designed that he's got these massive triangular eyes and nothing else, and yet it manages to convey sadness.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's such a lovely bit of design, and again, lovely performance by Rickman, and just this wonderful, bedraggled, woe-begotten character. There's some lovely bits in the books and in the radio series towards the end of his life and how he gets treated that's quite sweet. And so just as a character, I think in general, he had to be my number one.
Of course. I would expect no less. And I didn't.
Of course. I'm glad to be predictable.
So it was really interesting, actually, because I had David Eagleman on the podcast talking about his favourite sci-fi film, which again is about AI, the creator. And so he talks about robots having feelings, and I took my opportunity to use Marvin the Paranoid Android as the cover photo for that, because I was like, it's got to be the Paranoid Android.
It's what is it? Sounds ghastly. It is ghastly. absolutely ghastly. Lovely. What is your number two then, please?
Okay, so I absolutely love this film. It is Ava from Ex Machina.
Yes.
If you did want to try and go the female pleasure bot way, then I think that would be a very good one to do, because it flips everything over on its head. It is about for people who haven't seen it, it's about a guy who is a tech software type of engineer, developer, who gets sent to some tech billionaire's pad up in the kind of foresty mountains and goes to meet this amazing AI woman, and she wants him to help her escape. And considering we have such a long history of pleasure bots, fembots, and all those kind of things, it's really, really great that it flips that whole script upside down.
Yes, it is the at least the second, if not the third mention, I think definitely the second of Ex Machina in List Envy canon, because we did films about computers. It's just such a good film.
I would say top five of my favorite sci-fi films. I don't know what the top one is, but it's definitely top five for me.
Yeah, it's so deserving. And I think the moment, massive spoiler, where it's Donald Gleason, isn't it, who plays the software engineer?
I don't know that actor's name, but that sounds about right.
I think it is. Looking at it for notes. He has a moment where he looks in the mirror to check. And I think he's about to take a knife to himself to figure out whether, if he cuts himself, he'll see a bunch of circuits, because he's been not gaslighted, but like, he's just so unsure of where he stands. I think it's such a lovely scene. It's so, so good.
And I think that's the lovely thing about a lot of these kind of films, like about androids, is they're ultimately about how humans are, how we treat each other, how, you know, what are our ethics, how can we treat other humanoids, and things like that. And that's why it becomes interesting, because, you know, when we take away sentience or the concept of sentience from someone else, how do we ourselves, you know, we kind of do that in life when we're, you know, wars and stuff like that, we dehumanize each other. So I love all of that stuff. I'm sure more of that may come up.
Oh, yes, it will. Okay, so my number two then is Ash from Alien.
Okay.
What's that noise, please?
No, that's fine. I didn't actually even think about Alien, which is why I'm slightly annoyed at myself, but that's okay. That was that.
Yeah, I think so. We know early on that this is an android ass android. Like, there's no debate. He's, you know, he's sentient. He's got an AI. He is completely humanoid. And you know, I grew up again having seen Aliens first, and thinking, okay, that's fun. That's pew pew. but then watching Alien, I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is a horror film. More than it is a sci-fi, really. But you know, it's a sci-fi setting. But you know, I was, you know, thoroughly into the monster hunting, the suspense and all that stuff. And then you get this scene where Ash goes berserk and a bunch of white goo starts pumping out of him, and his head like flips off backwards, and he's sort of running around with his arms flailing, going absolutely nutso. And then he ends up as a big pile of goo with a head on him, and they still sit and talk to the head, and it's just like, it's so great. And You know, yes, there are certain bits that are that don't hold up or that are massively anachronistic. You know, you've got this, you know, however many thousands of years in the future spaceship, but they've still got teeny tiny little monitors that make teletype noise.
The retrofuturism probably wasn't apparent at the time, but I love any of that stuff. So when you watch it now, all the kind of, you get these massive computer screens with loads of little light, beep, 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 and the screens look very much like 70s TVs.
Yeah, all CRT, all like DOS prompts. It's great. But yeah, I just think Ash was so wonderful as a, and Ian Holm played him, you know, so well. And then, you know, in Aliens you get the fun thing then of Ripley being massively mistrustful of androids, and or I think they have a special name for them. They're not called androids. I think they're called something else. But yeah, there you go. Ash.
Good one.
Thank you.
Okay. Number three, the grandmama of androids, potentially. I'm going with Evil Maria from 1927's Metropolis.
Wow. Okay. You have the floor.
Okay. So I only watched this film in February this year. It's because I decided to make a podcast where I get to watch loads of science fiction films that I've never seen before in my life and have always wanted to. And I've had a copy for absolutely ages, and it's really, really, really phenomenally good. And it seems like every time I see a scene from it, I'm like, oh, that reminds me of this, and that reminds me of that, and that reminds me. And it's because they all kind of come from Metropolis. And it's interesting because there's a robot that gets then given a likeness of the heroine of the film, who is so over the top goodness, and it's Maria, and Evil Maria. And it's got all these big kind of religious themes and all that kind of stuff that you might expect. And Evil Maria is, you know, she's just terrible. She's like a sinful, you know, sowing discord, mischief, being kind of the seductress in a club, and then everything possible that she can do to cause mayhem. And yet she's the beginning. Well, maybe she's not the beginning. I'm sure that there might even be earlier iterations of it. But this beginning of men making female robots, in this case, it's because someone who has lost a loved woman who wasn't even with him. She was with the main bad guy in Metropolis, but the big businessman who kind of sits on top of the tower. But, you know, either replacing women or having these kind of women become robots. And it's also interesting because we live in an age where that could potentially become a thing. Like, quite soon we might have these, and I'm not even sure if you maybe do, like these kind of silicony metal pleasure bots. And it's just very interesting how for men that's kind of been a long time kind of goal, where women, because they can't control them, I assume, are just not what they really want. And they're like, well, it'd be
women
great.
Should not be allowed to have robots, of course. They shouldn't know how to operate them.
I saw someone on social media saying, well, men can have all the pleasure bots, and then women just really want bodyguards. So can we have a bunch of bodyguards that can just walk around protecting us? So I was like, that's actually a really interesting look into kind of male and female psyche. So she's, it's interesting because of what it says about the men who make her. And then also how she's represented, like as someone who is sexually free, and her, you know, she's bad because she's too free, and I mean, also she's a bit of a troublemaker, to be fair. But yeah, so that's number three for me.
I'm fascinated by a sort of pre-computerized idea of an android, which, you know, because I guess, you know, if we look at Frankenstein, there is a sort of automatonous nature about a character like that. But like, are we talking like, you know, is it like clockwork? What's, you know, what is it? Do we know much about the sort of innards, the design of a 1927 android?
I don't know if you've seen the actual robot figure before she turns into kind of a human-like figure, but she is like a robot. So she is like a metal robot, which is actually put on by Bridget Helm, the actress. Apparently it was really difficult to film in. It was very hot and all those kind of things, very uncomfortable. And I suppose we are in this kind of futuristic time in the earliest 20th century where, you know, things are becoming more automated and we have factories coming in and everything become, you know, it's called the machine age and all that kind of stuff. So the idea that this is set potentially somewhere around 100 years in the future, I think they had an idea that that could become a thing. And robot, the word, and this is something I, again, only learned recently, is something that comes from a novel in the early 20s. So they've got that and they've kind of... A few years later, they've come up with this very interesting character.
Yeah, and I think it really shows the imagination of creators in an age before, you know, we really thought about binary or knew much about binary or how we can program computers, to think in, you know, not necessarily Android as a computer, but as a, you know, as a robot, mechanical consciousness. I think that's in an age before. You know, we're still kind of pre like tape, you know, hole punch tape card things, like when you know that
yeah,
you see that in the 60s with the likes of the Italian Job, but like, I don't know, I just think, yeah, that's really interesting. And I think this is gonna, when we come to our list, I think it's gonna have to feature fairly highly because it feels like such an important kind of progenitor. I will quickly do my number three because we've already talked about Terminator, and I was going to. So what I might do is I'll skip past it because, you know, it's not going to make the final five. Because I was going to talk about the evil Terminator.
I think the evil Terminator's my number six, actually. Just as
a backup. Okay, excellent. Well, we'll give it some proper shrift then.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to pick it because I often, you know, pick goodies when I do these kinds of things. But also, I mean, it's so much more advanced. It's got the liquid metal thing. I remember learning many, many years ago about how that technique was actually done, and I had the software that could do it. Obviously, I couldn't do it because I didn't have the talent.
You could if you wanted.
Yeah. Ray tracing and all that kind of stuff, you know, the tech at the time, you know, pretty, pretty cool. But just some of the things that it enables, and there's a couple of twin actors. You see them in a few things. I think they were in Good Morning Vietnam as well as in Terminator 2, because they wanted to do a scene where a prisoner or a security guard, I think, gets got by one of the Terminators.
Is it through the head, or is that a different one?
Yeah,
it's by the vending machine.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize they were twins. I thought it was very clever.
No, it's not super advanced, because they appeared a few years earlier in Good Morning Vietnam, and I don't think they have ever said any words, but they always just appear together in films. Dead giveaway. But yes, unstoppable, unrelenting killing machine. It will not stop. And it can transform into anything. Ah, it's great.
You know, the scene where, I should remember his name, John, he's running through the back, he's gone out the back, and he's in that corridor, and we see Arnie coming towards him. And as someone, if you've watched Terminator at that point, you are like, this is it. Ah! And you're like, thank God, this policeman is coming to save him. That's another thing I like about sci-fi, that it always teaches you to be very, very skeptical of authority.
Yes.
And at that moment, he pulls out the gun, and in the corridor, and he's like, get down. And you're like, what is going on? Like, I remember feeling like, what is going on? And then you're like, oh, well, that was quick. Now obviously John's going to be fine, because Arnie's going to protect him from this very slender, slight kind of
yes,
bad guy. And then when he gets up and all of those holes just suddenly liquid and he's like, oh, you just realize. And then it's the whole thing of like, there is nothing that can stop this. I was 13. I don't know if I would still feel the same now, but I still remember feeling that how I just could not get my head around, the idea of how... can you stop this unstoppable machine?
Inevitability. That's one of the things. I haven't done zombies yet on List Envy, which is kind of ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. Management has been sacked, but I think it's one of the things that I like about that genre is that when you get it wrong, you end up with a happy ending. And it's like, no, it's supposed to be bleak and inevitable. That's the thing about the zombie. Anyway, All right. So that was my number three. Who is your number four, please?
Number four. I'm sorry to be going very heavily female feminist on this, but number four is all of the Stepford Wives.
Excellent. This is a friendly place for feminism. So I will take it all day long. Absolutely. Tell me. I know nothing about the Stepford Wives.
1975. Again, I've only watched it in the last few months. Because I've wanted to watch it for a really long time. I know the premise of it, and it still holds up really well, in my opinion. I do have a lot of time for older films, as you might have gathered. So it's done so well, and it is, you know, made around the peak of second wave feminism. And it's this woman who goes into this village, town, suburbs of somewhere in the US, of New York. So they start in New York. There's a lovely scene at the beginning where she looks across and there's a man carrying a mannequin down the street. And it's, again, that concept of, you know, it's not just in robots, but something like Weird Science. Men want to make the perfect woman. Not all men. But the idea that women aren't right with their opinions and all this kind of stuff. And so...
Hashtag women be shopping.
Yeah. And so it's really well done. And it's just, they go into this town, somewhere in the suburbs, and slowly the women kind of change. And they are these kind of normal, three-dimensional, vibrant, engaging, funny human beings. And suddenly they become the kind of stereotype, what the 1950s kind of ultimate housewife who does everything and waits for her man. And it's really, for I think... a lot of women, it's really scary. It's a really, really scary film. And yeah, and I think people should watch it. And I think the ending is brilliant in a kind of, don't want to spoil it. It's good. It's all round good stuff. And also it just shows those kind of, you know, it's about women and female friendships and kind of those kind of connections. It's such a lovely film.
Excellent. I will very happily add that to my queue. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. My number four, then, is David from AI.
Oh.
Yes.
Interesting.
Haley Joel Osment.
Brilliant actor.
Yeah, I think this film is unjustly maligned.
Is it maligned? I would like to know about that.
Yeah, I believe so. At the time, I think maybe it's changed now, but I think at the time it was considered... I don't know. It felt like I had more conversations with people that were rolling their eyes at that film. Just didn't like it. Found it silly, boring, confusing. I don't think it's confusing. Or they didn't like the ending. I think there's all sorts of things. But I think if I watched it again now, I think I feel like my sense of empathy has grown as I've got older. And I think this film might make me cry if I watch it now, because... going back, the dad in this, I think is, I mean, I haven't rewatched it in a while, but I, you know, the dad is a right jerk. He convinces his wife that because they've got a kid who's been in an accident, or he's very unwell, and so he's in suspended animation. And so the dad's just like, let's just get a new one. You know, we'll get one, but we'll get a metal one, and it'll be great, and it'll learn to love us, and it'll be wonderful. And she's not into it, and then, you know, she gets talked around or whatever, or sort of bonds with David, and then they do this imprinting ritual, which is at this point now, David will be able to he will love you, his mother. And that's a pretty big thing, that you have this completely, you know, capable of love creation. Martin, the family son, then comes back to life. There's an incident where David accidentally drags Martin into a swimming pool, and he has to be rescued. And at that point, the parents are like, "Right, off to the woods with you."
Yeah.
And they drive him out into the woods and leave him there. And then that's basically where the story, his adventure begins. But that to me is like, it's so big, it's so pivotal, and yeah, you know, this boy then tries to go off and find a way to have a connection with a mother figure that will love him, and yeah, big old story.
So I saw that in the cinema, And I'm going to be one of those people that you probably, I don't know what other people think about it, but I absolutely loved it until the last kind of half an hour.
Right.
And so there's the tragic, sorry, spoilers ahead. There's the tragic end where he's down at the bottom of the sea and he's in, and it's just like, oh my God, this is such a beautiful, perfect, tragic ending to this story about how, you know, we throw love away or whatever it is, and all these things. And then there's that whole half an hour with the aliens and the things. And I'm like, I mean, I know it's giving him a happy ending, but I think it really took away from the poignancy of that whole film.
Yeah, I won't fight you on it.
That's because you said you weren't very confrontational. We can fight.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if I haven't actually read this to know what is canonically true. But I know they look like aliens. I always thought of them as effectively a race of AI beings that were sort of, you know, over millennia had effectively designed themselves to be very sort of sleek and easy to sort of maneuver and move around. And, you know, this sort of economy of things, whatever. And so that was always my interpretation, but I don't actually know. That might be absolute bunkum. But either way, like, yeah, you're right. And it's maybe where the Kubrick meets the Spielberg.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It would be interesting to know where Kubrick would have... So Kubrick was supposed to, you know, have made this. It would have been interesting to know if he would have ended it, or if he would have just... I mean, obviously it would have been different, but he generally was a bit of a darker filmmaker.
Yeah, but I think... I definitely appreciate your take, and I think that's not uncommon as well. It's just it was perhaps a bit on the sappy side, but there you go.
It's okay to like sappy things, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. You can't all be pew pew all the time.
Sometimes it needs
to be hug.
Yeah.
What is your number five then, please?
Okay, so I feel like this is slightly cheating, but only in the way that your paranoid android was slightly cheating. In that,
sure,
you know, really. Marvin, I feel, belongs in the book or the radio play. And number five, Data, really belongs in TV. Now, there are some really strong contenders, which maybe should be above Data. But as someone, as I've mentioned, who grew up watching The Next Generation, you know, Picard will always be my captain. And Data is just, he means so much to me. When... I'm assuming spoilers are absolutely fine. When he died, I watched it in the cinema and I did cry, and I was there with friends. So I'd gone back home to the Midlands, and I'd watched it with two of my friends who, you know, were also big Trekkies as teenagers. And, you know, you don't want to appear weak in front of people like that. You've grown up being teens.
Mustn't show weakness.
You're cool. You're hard as nails. And I think all three of us were crying. And it really, really affected us. And yeah, it's really weird, because even though I absolutely adore Next Generation, I don't actually like many of the characters in it. Like, I love the actors and I love the show and I love everything about it. But a lot of the actors, I'm like, oh, it's not just Wesley. It's a lot of them. And even though I adore the actors, I know that there's something about the characters where, well, why are they doing this? Why are they, you know, there's always that thing, but not with Data. I've always loved Data and Picard. And so that is my number five, and I've kind of snuck him in, but I think it's valid.
I perfectly valid. He was in my honorable mentions. So yeah, completely valid. I have a problem with Star Trek that I've never been able to adequately pin down.
How very dare you, sir?
I know. There's something that I think the only way I can best put it is that it, for me, takes itself far too seriously. It's for me, it always felt like it was looking over its glasses and going, do you get what we're doing? It's like, yeah, no, we get what you're doing. But there was just always a tone to Star Trek that... certainly in TNG and beyond, that I don't know, but I will happily sit and watch an episode and a few, and I have, you know, watched lots of TNG and enjoy it, but at the same time, it's not something that I'm hungry to go back for, because it's like, it's a little bit more broccoli than it is chocolate. It feels a little bit more like eating my greens. I don't know.
Yeah, for I think people who love it, that, I mean, I've not been to a convention, and I sadly don't have any Star Trek outfits. But for people who I think used to watch it when they were growing up, for me, it's, I want to be part of Starfleet. I want to live in that universe. And it's, you know, it is actually a beautiful future that you could kind of potentially look forward to, that we live in this post, you know, money is kind of, well, I mean, it's gone dark again recently. But the concept is, I think, is a good one.
Absolutely. Yeah, fine choice. Okay, so my number five then, well, from Star Trek, let's mosey on over to Star Wars. And I'm going to go with C-3PO. And I think I'm not really going for favourites here, but I am going for a sort of a notoriety, if you like, because, you know, I've got plenty of other honourable mentions. But I feel like, you know, it seems rash to not bring him up. Protocol droid, we all know. I mean, you know who C-3PO is.
Yes.
But he's not a sympathetic character. He's a coward. He's a kind of a know-it-all. He's a bit of a snob.
But very polite.
But very polite, yes. Yes, absolutely. Quite British in that sense. Yeah, and so as I was sort of looking around at this stuff, there's an interesting kind of parallel that some people draw, or a line that people draw between Trek and Wars in terms of sort of androids versus droids, I guess, in that androids in Star Trek are sentient, whereas droids in Star Wars are not. And so there is an argument as to whether C-3PO is even an android and whether he is sentient. He's, you know, very much an artificial intelligence, but I don't know. Yeah, so C-3PO, he's gold, he's whiny, and there he is. I picked him because R2-D2 didn't feel
humanoid enough.
Mm.
and I feel, when you're talking about feelings, and obviously we anthropomorphize everything, I just kind of feel that R2-D2 is a bit more potentially feeling.
Yeah. You know, he's cuter in as much as a trash can be.
And also, I feel like he's more part of the rebellion. Like, C-3PO is just going along with it because he feels like, you know, that's his job. He's got a job with the rebellion, so he has to kind of go along with it. Whereas I think R2-D2 is more of an active member of the rebellion, which doesn't make sense if they're not actually sentient. But in my reading of it...
But no, you're right. I mean, if we were to plot this on D&D grounds, we'd have... of course, this will have already been done, but R2-D2 is clear, lawful, neutral, I think. C-3PO is lawful, neutral, whereas R2-D2 is flat out like chaotic good. So listen, I did the reading ahead. I did the Googling. Listen, I'm not here to, I've got nothing bad to say about Aisha Khan and her thoughts about AI, right? Absolutely nothing. Fine guest. We'll talk about Aisha in a bit, right? Absolutely fine. Brilliant. But, and I am a little bit more proud of this than a 41-year-old man should be. I read it right in AI, and apparently lots of people get it wrong. Apparently, yeah, they are super futuristic robots, not aliens. I don't think that makes any kind of a difference. It certainly doesn't necessarily make the ending of AI any less saccharine. But maybe a little bit. I don't know. Like, yeah, it turns out 20-something-year-old me... read that bit of the film right, and they were like hyper-evolved robots that had made themselves into robots that had made themselves into and it's robots all the way down. So that's a point of pride. I'll stick that up on my wall. That's one for the CV, as my mum would say. Listen,
Thank you to Aisha for just indulging me in the in this conversation. Not for this, but obviously she's not here for this, but this would be excruciating. But what an absolute pleasure, right? Just, yeah, fantastic. And it's the kind of semi-encyclopedic, turbo-enthusiastic knowledge that Aisha brings that makes her not only a spectacular List Envy guest, but of course, the only person who can host a podcast called Every Single Sci-Fi Film Ever, asterisk. So listen, what I keep saying, listen, let's get back into it. Let us resume. We've got an important job to do. We've got to build our final top five list of films what have androids in them.
This one feels a lot harder than some of these that I've done. I usually sort of compiling a bit of a mini list in my head as we go through, but I think... I think I'm looking at what's going to go in the top spot at the moment, and I think let me talk you through where I am at the moment. I've got Evil Maria as five because I think she needs to be on the list definitely. I've put Data in as four, but I might move these things around. I might put Marvin in as four, Data as three, the T-1000 as two. And then I'm wondering, we probably need a place for Ava. So I'm wondering whether we bump the T-1000 up and make space for Ava. What are your general thoughts here?
So who are we going for number one?
I reckon, what do you feel about the T-1000 as number one?
Yeah, I suppose.
I think that was your number one pick.
No, mine was Arnie as number one, and T-1000 is the metal guy.
I've got me T's the wrong way around.
Right. Yeah, so
that's who I meant then. Sorry, yes, Arnie.
Yeah, I can also see T-1000 because he was such a formidable enemy. I don't know.
Yeah, I want some terminiversity. So I don't want to put both in, but I think yeah, okay. We've definitely got
to. So we have to make a decision.
It's tricky. It is a tricky one.
Making a decision between those, then maybe it has to be Arnie because he's in both of them. Well, he's in loads more, but I'm just going with two. Two films.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just going with two films. I think we should put Arnie at the top. Also because of all the great slogans and the, you know, I'll be back and hasta la vista and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so many good lines. Okay. Oh, and I forgot actually someone I've got to put in. Oh, okay.
Telltale.
I can't get rid of Data. Because I just think it's, yeah. Marvin, just, you know, I can't get rid of. Evil Maria, like, is such an important place in history, especially as the, you know, the provenance that you've talked about. And I want Ash in there. But we do already have sort of, you know, bad robots that turn good. We need Ava to be in there. So I'm wondering, do we knock maybe Ash out and put Ava in there?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of ones that I can't let go, I think it would have to be Ava, maybe even more than like Data's my number five. Love him to bits, but the kind of revolutionary nature of this, I don't know, anti-hero, I guess, is quite, I think that's very clever.
Okay, how's this then, from one to five? Arnie as the Terminator, Ava, Marvin the Paranoid Android, Data, and Evil Maria.
That sounds excellent.
Okay, in that case then, I will ask you formally, Aisha, do you consent to this list?
I do consent to this list. Thank you for asking.
Who have we not got to? I've got, to give you sort of a sense of where I'm coming from, I've got, we've got a big question that I'd like to discuss about Blade Runner, if we have time.
Yeah, so Blade Runner's in mine as well, yeah, as the honourable mentions, yeah.
Yeah. I've got Sunny from iRobot, the Fembots from Austin Powers, just for the lols. Yeah. Chip from a TV film called Not Quite Human, which I loved as a kid.
Okay, I'm not.
It was a Disney TV, I think it was Disney, TV film. I remember seeing it in a hotel in Florida when I was seven, I think.
And do you trust your seven old self to be recommending this film?
No. I don't think it's okay. Good. But that's why it's in my honourable mention. It needed a shout out more than anything else. That's all that matters. There's some Marvel nonsense about Ultronal Vision, but I don't care enough about Marvel. So who else didn't quite make your
Marvel,
list?
I think we've all got fatigue. Having said that, I cannot wait for the next Spider-Verse.
Who else didn't quite make your list?
Okay, so, and this is one of those things where I'm not sure if it's an android. HAL.
Ah, okay.
A very menacing AI from 2001 Space Odyssey. And just for, I mean, so I watched The Shining. So I was too young and I'd already watched a few dodgy, horror films at friends' houses, which I shouldn't have done. And then I was like, well, I'm 12 now. I'm pretty much an adult. And so I then spent about, I'd seen it advertised on Channel 4 and Shining was coming on. And I was like, I need to watch this. It looks amazing. I want to watch it. And I spent weeks and weeks and weeks trying to convince my mum, and my mum was like, there's no way you're watching this. There's no way you're watching this, for ages. And then my brother, who is 12 years older than me, so I would have been 12. He, at this age, is 24. He comes home and he's like, no, she's already seen. And he was there once when I watched this horror film called Demons, which is kind of like a zombie film. And he's like, she's seen that and she's survived it. Just let her watch it and she'll learn from it. And I watched The Shining and I woke up literally 14 times in the night, to the point that my mother was like, look, you just sleep next to me in the bed because I can't deal with you waking up anymore. But because of that, I think there's something about Kubrick films. Even when they're not trying to be scary, they terrify the hell out of me. And so 2001 Space Odyssey, I'm sure it's probably creepy for everyone, but I find it terrifying. So HAL is my number 7 behind T-1000. So then I just kind of put Blade Runner, which would then be, you know, is it Roy, like the Rutger Hauer character? Is it Priz? Is it, you know, is it the Sean Young character?
Deckard?
Yeah, is it? I'm never really sure about that because it's kind of implied. Yeah, that is the big question. So is it Deckard? And then you get to Blade Runner 2049, which again, I adore.
Yes.
And then it's so that whole thing, and that goes into all of these kind of philosophical ramblings that we've kind of touched upon. And then, so T-1000, HAL, a whole bunch of Blade Runners. And then I also had, but you've already said it, Marvin.
Yeah. I'm glad he made your honorables. I've learned some things. I thought I would. I am speaking to essentially a sci-fi expert.
Not at all.
Didn't need to put the word essentially in there.
Not at all. In fact, making working on this, and I love it. I really do. But I realize how little I know every single time.
But you are.
I'm enthusiastic.
Yeah, you are. I think what I'm beginning to think of as like a turbo enthusiast. Like that's what I love. It's that absolute pursuit of like, I don't know all the stuff, but you know what? I'm gonna by the end of it. Absolutely wonderful. So you are talking about every sci-fi film ever.
almost.
Where can people keep up with that show?
So it's on pretty much every single podcast platform, and you can also watch it on YouTube, which I don't think many people do. I think the ones that listen to my podcast generally listen on podcast platforms. And I'm also on Instagram, which is where I just keep up to date with the things that I'm researching, what films are coming next, who I'm speaking to, what I'm watching. And that's at Every Sci-Fi Film.
Fantastic.
And I should probably mention the website, which is everysci-fifilm.com, which is the only place you can get the proper full show notes, which are really extensive and they have character limits everywhere else.
I love that so much. This is someone, dear listener, I think you are someone who appreciates a good podcast. This is a good, like, this is a podcast ass podcast. This is exactly how we do this stuff. I'm thoroughly delighted that this thing exists. I love it so much.
I saw you post recently about how podcasts seem to be a gathering place for nerds. Is that what you said? Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like when you just want to find out more information, and I think that's what kind of drives a lot of people to be like, I want to know all this stuff, but I want to make time for it and I can't make time for it. So I'm going to start a podcast.
it's the best. So thank you for making that show and for teaching us more about sci-fi and for joining me on List Envy. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mark.